It's the Burt Cohen Show. Yes, you are. Mark Green here. Mark Green is a former public advocate for New York City and the Democratic nominee for mayor, and he was running on September 11th, 2001. He's the author and editor of 22 books, including the number one best-selling Who Runs Congress. Currently, he's the host of a nationally syndicated radio show, Both Sides Now, with Huffington and Madeline. Boy, that is interesting. And we're going to talk today on the Burt Cohen Show about Democrats and a backbone. What is going on with Democrats? Do we need to stand up and fight, as many have suggested, and others suggest, well, you know, just be moderate and don't fight. People are tired of the partisan bickering. But he wrote an article very recently, Mark Green did, along with Gary Hart, signed by 18 other prominent Democrats, calling on Democrats to show who they are, to stand up for what Democrats are. And Mark Green, thank you so much for being with us on the Burt Cohen Show.
Burt, I'm delighted. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, sure. And I don't know about you, but many people, including myself, see the 2010 debacle, fiasco, horror show, whatever, as at least in part explained by your words. And your words if you asked 10 people on the street what each party stood for, most could answer for the Republicans, but not the Democrats. What do you mean by that? And how did that contribute to the disaster of 2010 for the Democrats?
Well, the Republicans are, if nothing else, simple and clear, which is politically effective. So when Ronald Reagan never voted for him, although his son, Ron Reagan, is a friend and on our radio show, oddly. When the president said government isn't the solution, it's the problem, and then his party, and still today, Romney's party, stands for basically free markets, not big government.
Right.
Like it or not, you understand that. So what do the Democrats stand for?
Right.
And I find that Democrats, and I am a proud one, I ran as a Democrat,
Absolutely.
Won as a Democrat, lost as a Democrat, never voted for Republicans. Too often Democrats say, well, we're for a little smaller government. We're not anti-family. We're not, see, it's derivative
right.
and defensive. So what the public letter that I sent with Gary Hart and 18 other prominent Democrats from Norman Lear, Jennifer Granholm, Bob Reich, former Mayor David Dinkins, others said, is, look, this will be a clearly contrasting election of competing core values this November. Let's draw that contrast because we win on the issues of climate control, more voting, for example. And if we're not true to our principles, well, people have a Republican Party they can vote for.
That's
one more thing, Bert. You mentioned 2010.
Yes.
Where Democrats took, to quote the president, a shellacking.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to deny what happened that day, but I hope listeners appreciate the following. Normally, in the first off-year election after a president's party has taken over the executive branch, the party in power, by definition Democrats, will lose 30 seats. That's historic.
Mm-hmm.
This time, they lost 63 in the House.
Wow.
Why?
Exactly.
And I believe people haven't fully analyzed, a lot of the reason that it went from 30 seat loss to over 60 is that Karl Rove pioneered what will be regarded, I think, as an illegal scheme of using not-for-profit tax-deductible money to pay for political ads in the millions of dollars in swing districts. So a 3% Democratic normal win went to a 2% Republican win. And that shifted seats in what is historically, of course, a low turnout off your election. In 2012, it'll be instead of 38% turnout, it'll be closer to 60%.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2010, it was a much wider and older and more Republican turnout, as it is when fewer people vote. And in 2012, it'll be more like the year Obama got 53% against John McCain.
Well, I certainly hope so. And, you know, I remember back in 2010 when I was going door to door for a local Democrat, Carol Shea Porter. I took some time and talked to a person who said, well, she was voting against Carol Shea Porter for the Democrat because of Obamacare, because of the health care issue. And I spent some time, and she finally explained that she would have preferred just expanding Medicare. And the difference there between the Democrats and Republicans, one of them was that Democrats could say simply, big government coming down on you. What the heck could Democrats say? That's a simple thing. People get it. Democrats coming down on you. The thing, the Affordable Care Act is complicated, and it's hard for Democrats to be on the offense about that. Could they, in your opinion, Mark Green, been more on the offense about the Affordable Care Act, or was
it just completely? You know, let me say, I'm a big admirer and supporter of Barack Obama. I wrote in the Huffington Post with Gary Hart and others that after that convention, I mean, objectively, if you're a Martian looking at the lineup, here's this guy who thinks like a lawyer, speaks like a preacher, has the timing of a stand-up. He's intellectual and partisan. He combines Hawaii and Chicago and Harvard. He's really an amazing candidate and president. But, boy, did he fail after so-called Obamacare. Think about it. Instead of it being called the Affordable Care Act, instead of people immediately understanding, as they did if they watched the convention and saw a young mother named Stacy Lynn say the words, Obamacare saved my daughter Zoe's life, because when my 18-month-old needs a third surgery, she can have it, because lifetime caps have been lifted under Obamacare. You see what that does, Bird?
Very simple.
It puts a face on the virtue of expanding health insurance to 30 million people, and that number is good for insurance companies because they have more customers. In exchange, the insurance companies are getting less money from Medicare, and that's the savings from it. So it's a win-win. But there are low education people who only know the generality,
right.
Big government takeover,
right?
Which is not, because
no.
Healthcare is still privately distributed. But they don't know, or until now they didn't know, about the benefits in terms of preconditions, young people staying on care, lifetime caps, less insurance company fraud. That's all positive. And the measure that finally we're winning the communications argument is Obama says, yeah, it is Obamacare because I care and Romney doesn't.
Right.
And a nominee Romney on the Sunday talk show Meet the Press said, oh, I like parts of Obamacare. What a shift.
There is no Romney. There is no Romney. He's just a puppet.
That's a good point.
I mean, there's just nothing there. We're talking with Mark Green, who co-wrote a letter with former U.S. Senator Gary Hart, former presidential candidate, and 18 rather prominent Democrats. And as you said, Mark, calling for Democrats to have some backbone. You say in the article, not just facts, but stories. This, I think, I'm getting the sense that, you think stories, personal stories like that woman you cited at the convention, you think that's a way to win in November, that people can connect better with that? Are Democrats going to pick that up and do it, not just talk about facts now?
Well, I worked for 10 years with Ralph Nader when I was a young public interest lawyer in the 70s. And for a long time, I've watched how Republicans have won the branding contest. They're the party of faith and flags and family. Anybody listening against those three things, you know?
Right.
No. But when they speak in generalities like that, in a patriotism and less regulation,
right,
they win because that frame implies that the other side is for more regulation. Now, if the frame instead was, hey, mom and dad, you want to avoid your kids getting E. coli bacteria, or do you want strong food regulation?
Right.
Do you want mercury in your fish and food of your children, or less mercury? Do you want emergency rooms overrun with so-called free riders who don't have insurance? What do you want, a healthcare system where everybody, rich and poor alike, have mammograms and preventive care for prostate cancer? So less disease, less hospitalization, and a net savings. Democrats have failed to explain the benefits while Republicans have won the generalities war. So when we say, Governor Patrick Duvall gave a very highly regarded speech at
Indeed.
The convention.
Yes.
And at the end, he said, Democrats grow a backbone. 2 points, Bert. One is, I ain't going to lecture President Obama, who many people thought was too conciliatory with Republicans who just hated him, and we now know it. But starting September 7th, with a speech in Kansas City to a joint session of Congress, he has now pushed back hard. He's doing it. But Gary Hart and I and the others wrote a letter to congressional Democrats.
Right.
Saying the way to win majorities, keep a majority in the Senate, win a majority in the House, is not to just go to your cubbyhole and make calls for money every day. But why should Michelle Bachmann and Gohmert and Steve King and Alan West have all the fun by making crazy accusations? We should make accurate contrasts with the other side. Because while they're denying global warming, we understand why New Orleans and southern Manhattan are watching our streets getting flooded because of extreme weather.
Yeah, it's those stories, I think, that people can connect with. And, you know, you can talk about issues and facts and policies, but people have to connect. They have to connect. And it seems to me, you know, with so much demand on the average American's time these days, it's about connecting, and stories absolutely, I believe, can connect. Mark, you raised an interesting point about the convention, the Democratic convention, you know, Deval Patrick talking about growing a backbone and standing up for a backbone.
Oh, I may have called him Patrick Duval. I apologize.
No, maybe I screwed. I don't know. But we know who it is, the governor of Massachusetts. Frankly, I had no idea he could give that good of a speech. That was very impressive. And which brings up the quote from my friend, and probably yours too, Bob Borisage of Campaign for America's Future. He said,
"Yes,
very simply, passion attracts, cautious positioning alienates." What has been with congressional Democrats who just, you see them do this cautious positioning all the time? And, you know, it does see, you know, a lot of Americans are saying, you know, we're sick of all this partisan bickering. You've heard that phrase a lot, I'm sure. That's what they see. They see Obama and Romney hurling insults. There's this group, No Labels, that advocates just accepting the right-wing rhetoric and policies as the new mainstream. But you, in the article with Gary Hart, you wrote, now is the time for congressional Democrats to sharpen differences to win and govern. So are you guys advocating more partisan bickering that people say they hate?
No, the partisan bickering is one way to describe it. I believe reality has a liberal bias.
Yes.
of course, I'm quoting Stephen Colbert.
Yes.
And it isn't partisanship to follow the facts. For example, Congressman Paul Ryan had this big reputation of being a conservative thinker. He then gave his convention speech, and neutral fact checkers said, wait a second, this guy is a serial liar, blaming Obama for the shutting of a GM plant in his home district, but it was under Bush.
Right.
Blaming Obama for stealing $716 billion from Medicare when that's the same number in Ryan's plan. It isn't stealing anything. It's saving money. I mean, I thought Republicans were for cutting waste and fraud. When you cut through to the facts, Democrats win. Right now, not since, my God, probably the 1930s, certainly the 1850s, has there been such one-sidedness and a loss of the center. In the 1960s, some 40 U.S. senators, according to surveys, like Jacob Javits of New York, for example, those with a memory, Clifford Case of New Jersey, could vote left or right, Democrat or Republican. Javits didn't support Goldwater, the nominee, in 64. Now we're down to one or two senators who will occasionally vote on the other side. The center has collapsed. And all the polls, Bert, show that 92% of Americans wake up for reasons of biology, heredity, church, faith, community, knowing how they're going to vote. And hence, right now, it's sort of 48-45 for Obama.
Right.
The middle is 6, 7, 8%. So if Democrats sharpen differences and stand for health, environment, democracy, and voting, and a stimulus because it saved the economy last time at a time of near recession.
Sure did.
Those are not just left-right issues. They are right-wrong issues. And Democrats and Republicans now are on the defensive when they urge austerity economics, which is what Europe is following, and America, though sluggish, now has the strongest economy in the Western world, which is a true sentence, notwithstanding the bellyaching from Republicans that we're not better off than under Bush. I mean, can you imagine actually trying to make the argument, factually, that, oh, we're not better off now than we were when we were starting two wars with a collapsing economy, a drowning city? Good luck in that argument.
Well, you know, as I think it was Ronald Reagan who said that facts are stubborn things. Facts are inconvenient things. You know, and Al Gore had that movie, The Inconvenient Truth. But I don't, you know, it's, again, it comes back to, it seems to me, about connecting with people, stories that people can relate to. If a fact is just out there, but it's not in some, you know, context of a story that people can relate to, it doesn't work as well. I mean, for example, the Republicans are talking about doing away with basically all federal regulations. And I would think that if people think, am I okay feeding my children uninspected meat? You know, pre-Upton Sinclair's The Jungle?
Right.
You know, hopefully that can connect. I don't know. I wonder if, you know, you don't often see a lot of Democrats with real backbone. I think those that on the right that do, you see them, and you know, they get their faces on the tube, and that brings in money, and it helps them out. And I don't know, Democrats, I'm wondering if there's a change, because in recent years we've seen, you know, Democrats hide for cover and be, you know, Republican light, as we mentioned before. Is there
why? Bert, it's good for us and our audience. I believe what you're saying is true, and I think everybody, almost everybody, would agree with it. In the open letter in our Huffington Post article, and it was in the New York Times letters section, we argue that the reason is, A, there's a major cable network that's simply a conveyor belt of falsehood.
Yes,
I mean, when people say, what does Fox get wrong? The question is, when have they ever told the truth? Let's start slowly.
Yeah, really.
I know people who simply watch Fox, read the New York Post, and so they have a view of reality that's completely distorted. So if they're white working class people who are about to get a bigger tax bill, because Romney's economics, if it's in place, would end deductions for the middle class, so they'd have a lower rate but pay more. Now, if you told them you're paying more under the Republicans and Obama's cutting your taxes, it wouldn't compute, because Sean Hannity has been yelling lies for decades. Second, money shouts.
That's right.
Who has money? You know, when people say, oh, labor and business, you know, they both spend money. What a joke. Capital has 300 times the money of labor. The Koch brothers, Bert, alone, one family, has more money than all of American labor does in their treasuries, $50 billion. And so Democrats, a lot of, look, I ran for office. I had to raise millions,
Get
millions of votes. I understand the cross currents. A lot of time, the fat cats have their tongue. They don't want to bite the hand that funds them.
Exactly.
And so they mute themselves in order to maintain the money flow. That's changing with texting for $3 contributions and using the internet to get thousands of people to give modest amounts rather than scores of people to give $2,000.
So interesting. So, Mark Green, you're suggesting that with the advent of Facebook and tweets and all that other stuff, that it might actually free up Democrats who have been, you know, really frightened of alienating their benefactors, so that now they're able to look to a wider universe. And that's a really interesting and rather significant change. I mean, a lot of people have just seen, oh, Democrats and Republicans, they're all the same. They're all beholden to the same corporate money. You're suggesting that maybe that's starting to change?
Well, there is a lot of truth to the argument. Oh, both parties are indebted to big corporate money.
Yes.
Because, you know, who has money in our society?
Right.
CEOs or line workers, please.
You're right.
However, there are two changes that can go on that can allow Democrats to grow a spine and to sharpen differences and win elections and then have a mandate. One is this small donation aspect. And I don't know about you, I give to Democrats, and every day I'm getting these emails.
Oh, yeah.
Hi, Mark, it's Nancy Pelosi here. Will you send $3
right now?
I kind of know it's not Nancy Pelosi calling her buddy Mark, okay? I got that.
Yeah.
And I get 10 of these a day from every candidate.
Yes.
Clearly there's a shift toward many more smaller contributions. Second big shift, Bert, and this is doable, not pie in the sky. You had said that I was a New York City public advocate. It's the number two office in New York City. And as that, when Giuliani was mayor, I wrote a part of our campaign finance law. So now, if you contribute up to $175 in New York City to mayor, public advocate, city council, the city matches it in public monies 6-1.
Wow.
So it's public funding for public elections. So a candidate doesn't have to simply call wealthy people. A candidate can call his or her buddies from high school and college, get $175 a head, and then it becomes over $1,200. We want that kind of public funding for public elections to go national. And I'm going to be organizing a national movement with Public Citizen, the group Ralph Nader founded 40 years ago in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And we call it Money Out, votersin.org. And within a week, we'll have a website. It's a public petition. We demand democracy. And one of the three goals of it will be the democracy funding, public money and public elections, like occurs in Maine, Connecticut, New York City, Arizona, New Jersey.
Really?
If those locales can do it, so can Washington.
Fascinating. We are talking with Mark Green, former public advocate for New York City, Democratic nominee for mayor, and I believe the election was going to be held September 11th, 2001, but it wasn't. He's the editor of, or author and editor of 22 books, including the number one best-selling Who Runs Congress? And we're talking with Mark Green. You talk about the need for public funding. Interesting. I frankly didn't know that all those public entities had public funding. My sense is that, you know, that's down the road quite a piece, that members of Congress aren't clamoring for it. The public isn't clamoring for it. It's not high on the public's agenda. We are, in addition to getting these emails barraging us for money every day, the money is being spent by the Koch brothers on TV. Huge, huge expenditures. And, people, I think, start to believe that. And I wonder, not everybody talks about the effect of the Citizens United decision, its effect on democracy itself. Do you have a sense that Americans are getting how bad that decision is, and that could possibly drive the move for public funding, which could possibly save democracy itself?
Yes, period.
Good.
I've been personally working on this with so many others in my community for 40 years. And you mentioned I had written with Ralph Nader and James Fallows, who runs Congress, in 1972, with additions later.
Wow.
Our thesis, money runs Congress.
72.
Then Watergate happened.
Jeez.
And the best campaign finance law was enacted in 1974, because for that moment, candidates were more afraid of voters than donors. Half that law has been kept. Half was thrown out because five technically brilliant but politically stupid Republican nominees like Antonin Scalia and others said, money doesn't really matter. Money is speech.
Right, right.
No, money is property.
Yeah.
But, okay, so they passed rulings that whittled down the Watergate reform laws, and it led to, as you say, the Citizens United decision 2.5 years ago. In a sentence, for a century, it was illegal to spend money politically on campaigns out of corporate treasuries or union treasuries. They could set up political action committees separately and raise
right.
it. And that was a good law, because when you or I as shareholders give trillions to corporations to, create products and markets and services, that's a commercial capitalism. That's cool.
Yeah.
But to use our shareholder money to make a widget and instead buy a congressman is a bait and switch. The court allowed that. And we are now on the brink of completely changing our democracy.
Yes.
Because if the Koch brothers alone, worth $50 billion, can overwhelm 50 million voters because of their money with ads and what have you, but then we have a plutocracy, a plutonomy, in effect. So what when you say that, I have never seen such attention to the issue of money in politics and voter suppression as now, because of the super PACs and Sheldon Adelson and the others giving money, and states like Ohio and Florida disgracefully enacting anti-voting laws that will reduce the amount that, frankly, a lot of elderly black families won't vote
right.
because they don't have driver's licenses anymore. They don't have government IDs. While you and I, Bert, have a fixed location where we live and we vote, a lot of these older people who vote Democratic and younger mobile students don't. So this election is such a big deal, because if Obama wins and some of these reforms, like overturning Citizens United, perhaps a constitutional amendment or new justices, and universal voter enrollment where everybody's enrolled at birth, like in Europe, so you don't suppress the vote. Unless that occurs, if Romney and Ryan and the others win, money will deluge our democracy.
Absolutely.
And it will completely change. And I don't know how you change it once money is regarded as speech, because then wealthy people, like in our founding, when we had a property requirement to vote,
right,
we would have gone 230 years and gone backwards.
Hmm. Well, I wonder if people are getting it. I get the sense that because there is so much attention to it, because the airwaves are so clearly different this year from previous years, and that there's all this, Koch brothers, Americans for Prosperity, whatever. I think people are seeing it, but if Obama can win and that people make this an issue, it certainly can be changed. And I got to tell you, I'm old enough, I suspect you are too, to remember when there was the KKK and George Wallace openly calling for not allowing blacks to vote. Today, it's the Republican Party. It's a lot more subtle, but it's the same goal, keeping blacks, elderly people from voting. I wonder if Democrats are challenging this enough. I mean, I guess the Supreme Court said, yeah, you can do it. You can require photo ID. But you and I know there really is no voter fraud. There's practically none. The only voter fraud is from the people counting the votes, largely.
Well, the Pew did a study of voter fraud, meaning voter impersonation. Okay. So I go to the ballot box, I go, hi, I'm Bert Cohen. And I'm not. And that's voter impersonation and fraud and wrong.
And a felony.
That should be a crime. So they go, oh, you really are Bert Cohen? Oh, yeah, yeah, I am.
Oops.
Well, sign this affidavit if you don't have ID. And if I lie in that affidavit, it's a felony.
Right.
That's cool. That would stop it. That happened 10 times in 10 years. Out of 150 million people voting.
Amazing.
Okay. Now, sometimes people, when they register to vote, goof around and they sign Mickey Mouse.
Right.
Well, guess what? That shouldn't happen. But Mickey Mouse doesn't end up voting because the registrar will see the person is not Mickey Mouse.
Right.
And so the Wall Street Journal and the Florida and Ohio GOPs have said, oh, all these Mickey Mouses are voting. So we have to stop millions of people potentially from voting
right. In
order to catch 10 impersonators.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's voter suppression, no question.
It's insane, and you've got to call them on it. And I'm happy to say, come on. The literacy test face of it
right.
was not racial.
Right.
Oh, you want to vote? Name the people who died in the Titanic. And when you don't educate black children in the South in the 30s, 40s, and 50s,
right.
then the literacy test, de facto,
no,
not de jure, but in effect,
yeah.
had a racial standard.
Absolutely.
If I can just go on 30 more seconds, I'm a lawyer, not a good one. And I remember in law school, there was a famous case, Yik Wo, in San Francisco.
And
it was an anti-Chinese local ordinance, which said people cannot hang their laundry on clotheslines in their backyards because it's visual pollution. Sounds okay, maybe people didn't like visual pollution. Guess who the only people were who hung laundry in their backyards at that time? New arrivals
in China.
From the Far East.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a local law that sounded neutral,
right?
Like literacy tests, like voter ID. But it was targeted at a racial ethnic cohort.
Of course.
That's what these voter ID... And I'll tell you, Bert, if, God forbid, election night, Romney wins the presidency because of another couple thousand votes suppressed in Florida or Ohio, the two big treasures,
mm-hmm.
and he becomes president because the Republicans kept down votes of young and old for Obama... That's pretty scary because while Bush won a contested election in 2000,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't planned. Nobody thought those butterfly ballots would convince Florida Jews to vote for Pat Buchanan.
You're
for
right.
confusion. It happened. It was a tie and it was sad.
Yeah.
Here,
it's intentional.
The GOP is planning to suppress votes of the Obama constituency. So if it happens, it really will be the theft of democracy. And, I hope courts are starting to overturn these local laws and they'll do it.
Well, my question, as we discuss Democrats getting a backbone, are they talking about this? I can imagine a lot of congressional candidates saying, ooh, I don't want to talk about this because it will sound like I'm weak on, you know, voter security. You know, I'm weak on voter fraud. Are Democrats stepping up to the plate? Are they speaking out enough to do anything about this? Or are they kind of, you know, sheepishly keeping quiet?
Well, you put your finger on it. Candidates from the president on down haven't spoken much about it.
No.
Because today polls show a 2-to-1 support for voter ID laws because of the one-line argument, gee, if you have to show an ID in a bar or an airplane, why not for voting? Now, the problem is that getting a drink or flying on a United flight from New York to Miami is not a right. It's a privilege.
That is a big difference.
A commercial exchange.
Absolutely.
And you're entitled to ask whatever you want, basically. Voting is probably one of the most well-known attributes of a democracy. It's a right.
Absolutely.
And if I don't mind having voter ID, if everybody got an ID from the government saying who they were, oh, okay. But they're saying you need to show an ID like a driver's license. Guess what? A lot of young people and old people don't have driver's license. 1 in 10 black voters don't have a driver's license.
Whoa, that's a big number.
For white voters.
Wow.
So that's a flawed standard. Candidates don't like talking about it because it sounds like they're weak on voter.
Right.
I have watched, though, how lawyers and MSNBC and advocates are jumping up and down about it. It's a question whether Obama will raise the issue because he hasn't, other than obliquely.
Hmm. Well, we will see if he and if congressional Democrats have the courage to do that. You're listening to The Burt Cohen Show. Our guest today is Mark Green, former public advocate for New York City, Democratic nominee for mayor in September 2001. And we're talking about a letter he and Gary Hart co-wrote with 18 very prominent signatories, basically calling on Democrats to have a backbone. All right. At the Democratic convention, after some pressure from the right, I believe, Democrats put the word God in the platform. Now, that must have been, I can't imagine being a fly on the wall when that decision was made. It looks kind of like caving in, you know, with the goal being to win in November, which Democrats obviously want to do. Was that the right thing to do, or was that yet another sign of weakness and being, yeah, we're Republicans too, just a little bit less so?
It was the politically right thing to do, though it was a cave-in, in my view.
Right.
How could that be? Let me give you an example. I live in an urban area. I'm a strong advocate for gun control. You don't need assault weapons in New York, in Manhattan.
Right.
However,
nor to hunt deer.
Frank, they don't come smarter or more progressive.
Absolutely.
Said, you know, we're for gun control, but it doesn't mean we have to lead every campaign with it, because it can lose states like swing states.
Right.
Like Tennessee or Virginia.
Sure.
Well, the word God, great, we're the most believing country on earth. Our government is not based on God. The Constitution doesn't talk about God. And so God is out of the Constitution. So is the Constitution anti-religion? Of course not. However, Democrats, I assume the decision was made by, frankly, Obama, because he controls the platform at the Democratic Convention.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided, do we want to see a lot of ads saying Democrats are faithless people, which is ridiculous because
right.
the word faith and religion were 20 times in the platform.
Hmm.
Do we want to cut that off so we talk about, you know, how to grow the economy, how to maintain Medicare, you know, big issues. So they made the decision that discretion is the better part of valor.
Yes.
And they flinched on a lesser issue of rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're talking about the next 2 to 3 Supreme Court justices and the right of women to choose to go to term or to have forced deliveries. That's the word for it. If they can't choose to have an abortion under Roe v. Wade in the first trimester, or for rape or incest or the life of the mother in the last trimester, that's a bigger issue, in my personal view, than the rhetoric of whether we use the word faith or the word God in a platform.
So, as you say, discretion is the better part of valor, and why give the other side a weapon when, you know, you don't really need to? Now, when I saw President Obama very recently here in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, he talked about what you talk about, the clash of core beliefs. Do you think the Obama team plans to really define this clash? Are they going to embrace this clash? Let me further. It seems sort of risky, and a lot of Democrats, quite frankly, people running for election, re-election, are risk-averse. That means taking a side, defining themselves on one side of this great clash could alienate middle America. Are Democrats about to really embrace this clash of core beliefs and take a side?
Well, Obama is. And after the Republicans threatened to pull down the temple of the economy by not allowing an increase in the debt ceiling. Mm-hmm. It doesn't increase debt. It simply pays our bills backward. When he saw that they were willing to destroy the country for political gain, he said, okay, here we come.
Right.
And he has been pushing back, not saying, of course he wouldn't say this, wealthy people bad, poor people good. He's a wealthy man now because of his books.
And he talks about that openly, sure.
Who's against success? That's the definition of America.
Right.
What he's saying, though, is we all have to pay our share. And right now, the tax rate on the wealthiest Americans is the lowest in 60 years.
Mm.
And we have a deficit. And we have to spend public money, be it roads and bridges,
teachers
and firefighters, for example,
right,
to get the economy going after the Bush recession of a 9% collapse in the first quarter of 2009.
Hmm.
Well, if that's class warfare, to quote Warren Buffett, his class launched the war and is winning it. This is like America complaining that Japan attacked Pearl Harbor. It's warfare when the other side starts it. It ain't warfare when you hold a mirror up to it. For example, the Republicans, in my view, are launching class warfare by making up the lie that Obama wants to take the work requirement out of welfare.
Right.
Why are they doing that?
Gee, I wonder.
You know where I'm headed, Bert.
Yeah.
I mean, welfare, although a majority of the people on welfare are white, a disproportionate percentage of people on welfare per capita are black or brown.
Right.
And so by resurrecting the welfare queen,
yes,
they are trying to scare white voters. Now, if it were true that Obama is spending more on welfare because of he's ending the work requirement, well, they could raise that. Because it's a lie and because it has racial implications, fact checkers and Democrats have called them out on it. And this should. You saw the Pew poll that had 94% of black voters voting for Obama, zero for Romney.
Right.
That's funny. But you've got to make sure that that vote turns out.
Yes.
And by blowing the whistle on voter suppression, the lies about welfare, I think it will motivate the base because there's so few undecided. You've got to make sure your natural Democratic supporters bother because the stakes are very high and affect their families.
That's, I think, a very, very good point. Is you're right, there's not very many undecided, but the base that, you know, we a lot of people bought into the marketing of the term hope in 2008, and, you know, hopes were raised very high, so what a surprise. There's a lot of disappointment, and there's still, you know, there's things to criticize them on. But getting that hope and connecting and firing up the base is what I think you're absolutely right, the Democrats need to do. Now, one of the things about a potential base is, frankly, the narrative that was created very effectively by the Occupy movement. Virtually all Americans, I think, get 99 compared to 1%. But, you know, there's a lot of power here. And I wonder, beyond Obama, if congressional Democrats are afraid, once again, to tap into this powerful energy because of the risk of alienating big donors. And, you know, there's a lot of fear around the 99 versus one. Again, it looks like class warfare. What do you think the Democrats running for Congress are going to do on this?
I think they are afraid of losing donations. But those who are not self-financing and wealthy themselves, do a calculation. Every time they speak about these issues, they think about the donor class, because while many more people are giving smaller donations, this is happening with the rise of the internet, still a high percentage of monies raised come from a few local people who can give $2,400 contributions, not $24 contributions. It's a problem. Hence, you need public funding, and you need to overturn Citizens United so that merit rather than money determines our election. That's why, next to the issue of the economy and jobs, the issue of democracy stopping people from either buying or stealing the election has to be a close second for this election and going forward. So I hope Democrats, remember, every incumbent, by definition, used the current system to get there.
Yeah,
there is a bias among incumbents, and only incumbents vote in Congress, which is circular but true statement.
Oh yeah.
So they don't want to upset the apple cart and change the election laws that got them there.
Yeah.
That's why pushing for a constitutional amendment sounds incredible. How, you know, there have been 17 since the Bill of Rights.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But it happens when the public overwhelmingly agrees on something. And right now, there are majorities, Bert, of 70-80% against Citizens United. I mean, imagine, the public knows a court case well enough, so 70% oppose it because of the absurdity.
Yeah, really. That is
of arguing that money is speech and corporations are people. That's the Romney point of view, and Obama's come out for a constitutional amendment if necessary. One more point before we leave it, when you agree that Democrats should excite their base because,
yes,
what you want swing voters, the base of where the voters are. Look what Governor Romney did 2 weeks ago when someone as smart as Tom Brokaw said, oh, Romney made a bad joke when he was in Michigan, his birthplace, and said, I was born in this hospital, my wife Ann was born in that hospital, no one asked us for our birth certificate.
Mm-hmm.
And commentators nervously dismissed it as a joke. Are you kidding? When the Republican nominee plays to birther sentiment,
oh my God,
it's not a joke, it's a plot. A guy running for president who's as smart as Romney doesn't just kibitz off the cuff. He knew where he was and what he was saying.
Playing to his base.
Trying to get their base.
Yes.
It's called these dog whistles on racial issues like birth control. Well, Democrats should, in a proud way, do the same thing on money and voting.
Well, one question I got to ask is, as you say, consumer demand is the real job creator. Everybody who has a business knows that. And one of the ways to create jobs is, frankly, what Franklin Roosevelt did is create jobs. People, if the president, if Congress talked about new public works jobs, building high-speed rail, for example, I am convinced it would be extremely popular. The public wants this. I would think it would play really well and serve Democrats. Why the heck aren't they talking about this? Why the silence on public works jobs?
Well, President Obama is, you know, he started talking about it last fall big time. He has a jobs bill to spend funds now, because spending is a pejorative bad word.
Right.
Because the Fox GOP crowd is spending means big spending.
But it's an investment.
Any economist knows if there's less consumer demand because of a recession, and business isn't investing, they're sitting on $2 trillion. Well, economics says that the government then should spend more money in the short term for actual products that will enhance the economy. And more jobs now reduces the deficits over time. That's why we have these deficits, because of Bush's recession. So they should talk about it. But here's the problem. The people who were mesmerized by Fox, if you tell them, look, to spend some of your tax money and to tax the rich to pay for roads and bridges will help the future economy, get people working, and reduce the deficit, that's too much for them to handle, because they're so biased and they don't hear the other side. For this, you have a radio show. I make my living, such as it is, on a radio show. It's called Both Sides Now, as you introduced me, mm-hmm. with Huffington and Madeline. So instead of it just being all right-wing or all liberal radio, Mary and Ariana and Ron Reagan and Elliot Spitzer sitting for Ariana argue both sides. My goal is, if you hear both sides right. and there's better education, over time, facts win. It was Lenin and then Reagan who said facts are stubborn things.
Uh-huh.
And I agree with both gentlemen.
Well, I got to ask, and you point out, I think this is a great quote. Wars are won not by Dunkirks, but by Normandies. There's some risk in a Normandy. Please explain that phrase.
Well, I think people understand that Dunkirk was necessary, where thousands of boats saved the British Army. But eventually you have to get on offense. And, of course, that was D-Day in Normandy, which was very expensive.
Oh, yeah.
But which turned the tide of World War II, at least in the Western Front. Well, in politics, to quote Lee Atwater, a very famous deceased Republican consultant.
Heck of a nice guy.
He said, in politics, if you're on defense, you're losing.
Right.
And so Democrats can't simply say, well, we're not really for big government, we're not really for regulation, blah, blah, blah. Instead, you say regulation saves lives.
Right.
Smart regulation
mm-hmm.
saves lives and dollars. Who are you going to trust, big business or the democracy that stops pollution? There's a way to get on offense. And my favorite comment about this, Burr, was Ferdinand Foch, F-O-C-H, was the field marshal at the Battle of the in World War I, the Battle of the Marne, and he said of the approaching German army, my right flank has collapsed, my center is weakening, situation excellent, I am attacking.
That's perfect.
Close quote.
And
you got to know when to, Andy Murray, 2 days ago in the U.S. Open, he looked like he was going to lose the fifth set. And in this one day and one set, he had more will than the most amazing willpower player I've ever seen, Novak Djokovic. So tennis is like, and sports are like, wars are like campaigns. If you stand for nothing, the people who stand for something will look strong.
That's true, and I hope Democrats do it. You know, every election, politicians say, this is the most important election ever. Is this? Right now, 2012? How important is this for Democrats to stand up for something and to fight and to articulate who the heck we are and claim our identity?
Well, we didn't. The reason it really is true now is when George W. Bush ran in 2000. He was regarded as a center-right Republican, moderate father. And John McCain was regarded, he wanted to stop global warming. And this nominee and this Tea Party, Republican Party, this evangelical party is different. They're much more radical.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone says that.
Much more radical.
And it's numerically true. So the choice between Barack Obama and today's Mitt Romney slash Paul Ryan,
right,
I think is about the biggest ideological gap, correct me, we've ever seen, maybe since FDR, Alf Landon, I don't know.
A long time.
And certainly in the modern era. So this is a big time, big deal election.
Yes, it really is. Well, Mark Green, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, Bert, thank you for having me.
Well, and you're both sides now with Huffington and Matlin. When is that on and what channel?
It's aired in 60 stations, and it is a daily version in 300 stations.
Nice.
On Saturdays, different times. But anybody who wants to hear it can go to BothSidesRadio.com.
All right.
BothSidesRadio.com. Or every Monday in the Huffington Post, I summarize the show, and you can catch it there. Thank you for that.
All right. Thank
you for having me.
My pleasure. And it is about getting up and standing up. Hey, don't forget to email me, Bert@BertCohen.com. Thanks very much for listening.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. Is that all that glitter is gold?
God is a living man. You can fool some.